Well, I'm not sure that any of us would want to go through that. And we know that the Holy Spirit can change our lives and our personalities, and in fact, in most instances, has done that very well. But he doesn't take that into consideration. He doesn't talk about the Holy Spirit or anything like that at all. Still in all, what he says over the long haul, we don't really change in our overall styles. We can modify our behavior on a day-to-day basis, but we don't really change overall. Let's do it this way. Yeah?
Bob, when he says you're one or the other, he's great. You can be 59% one and 39%
the other. Yeah, what he's saying is that you're predominantly one. Now, you may have some good techniques, and you may have learned some things that help you to be more one way or the other, or to modify what would make an appearance that you are. But he'll say pretty dogmatically that you tend to be a task-motivated leader, not so concerned about people, or a relationship-motivated person where you're concerned more about people than the job.
But the difference could be very small.
It can be for some people. That's right. It's not for most, according to him. Now let's talk about the relationship-motivated leaders. Their primary goal is close relationships. That doesn't mean that they don't want to have success. They do want to have success. They want the job to be done. They want a job to be done well. But they look at the job in terms of being the way to develop relationships. So they see the job as a tool, so to speak, to be able to get to know people better, to deal with them better, and you know, to learn about themselves. Self-esteem grows as people react favorably. And it's self-esteem not only for the leader, but he tries to help build self-esteem in terms of the people that worked for him or her. It's likely to give special consideration to others' feelings, and sometimes that'll even get in his way. A guy who is very strongly relationship motivated sometimes will have difficulty trying to, say, give discipline. And is in a tough situation where he's got to give discipline, maybe even have to fire a person. He may carry a person much too long before he lets him go, simply because he's afraid of hurting his feelings or cutting down his self-concept or self-esteem. He'll seek out other people. He works well in groups. He likes working with groups. He likes running committees normally. Not that he likes the drudgery of committee work, but he likes working with the people in there, being able to see something brought to a successful conclusion, and especially as the relationships have a chance to develop within the committee. That'll be his stress. He is very conscious of the morale of the group. If the group looks like it's losing morale, he'll do whatever he can to find out what's causing it. If he's the cause, he will oftentimes change as much as he possibly can to rectify that situation. If he's not the cause and there's something else, then he will try his best to change that as well. He can handle different viewpoints, and sometimes that will get in a person's way. That is, he'll listen to so many different viewpoints that he's really not sure what decision he ought to make. But he wants to make sure everybody gets their say. He can deal very effectively with complex problems. Why? Because he is able to assimilate and take in a great deal of information, differing viewpoints, again, going back up to number six, from various sources, both people as well as, say, materials, books, and other sources of materials. He tends to be a creative and resourceful thinker. This just tends to be one of the characteristics of a pure form of a relationship-motivated person. He emphasizes participation. He does not like to see groups working with three or four or even just one person tending to hold back all the time. He will allow that person enough freedom quite often. Excuse me for my head. Can't take it off. I'll just move. Right. He doesn't like people to hang back. He'll give you the freedom not to always have to participate, but he would appreciate it if you did participate more often than you did not. 10, he tends to avoid using punishment even when it's necessary. He does not feel comfortable using punishment. He would rather use just about anything else before he uses punishment. And we're not just talking about corporal punishment here. We're talking about any kind of punishment. And the last thing is he tends to avoid criticism. Usually feels very uncomfortable trying to say, hey, this is what you've done wrong, this is where you blew it, and this kind of thing. He doesn't like to do that. He would much rather use positive motivation almost all the time. Now, juxtapose that with a task-motivated leader. A task motivated leader tends to need to get things done. Feels a strong need to be very punctual, wants to make sure that he's designed a goal, and he knows where he's going to go, and he knows what he's got to do to get there, that he gets it done. Now he tends to look at people as tools to get the job done, rather than the job as tools to get relationships with people. He's not very relationship oriented. Now he can learn. Now, there are people who are very, very, very dogmatically in this area of being task motivated, but there are ways that you can learn. First of all, we've got the edge, that is, Christians have the edge, in that a very highly task motivated person, or somebody who's very highly choleric, for instance, I've got some friends who are almost off the scale in being a choleric, because of the Holy Spirit in their life, they can be modified because they can pray through it and they can ask God's guidance and they can really change in a lot of ways. But we're dealing, of course, now with his particular theory, which has shown in most cases, and he's dealt with the secular world, to be a very valid sort of a thing. So again, they look at as people as tools to get the jobs done, which is very much different from the relationship-motivated person. Self-esteem grows from tangible, measurable proof of performance. They'll feel very comfortable with the management by objectives techniques. Nothing wrong with that. I think we can all use objectives and be able to perform better in our life. But they will tend to be the one who will want to use it all the time to the exclusion of other things, because they can measure their progress and then they can feel good about themselves so long as they've been able to show they've done anything. There's a strong desire to successfully accomplish all assigned tasks. Personal worth is affected by evidence of accomplishment. If the individual is thwarted in efforts time and time again to being able to get a job done, what often happens is they begin to feel like they're a failure. And they may not be a failure at all. They may already be doing so much more than anybody else that everybody else looks at them as very highly successful. But they don't tend to look at themselves through other people's eyes. It's, did I make my standards? Or at least the standards I've adopted. Tends to be extremely well organized. He's the kind of person who can take a task and break it down into each one of its constituent elements and say, man, here's the steps you need to go. Here's the sub-steps to step number 3, for instance, and here's the 5 sub-steps to being able to get step 3 done so you can do step 2 and step 1. Very well organized. So the people who have planning calendars and who will know what they'll have to be doing here 6 months hence, and it'll be on their calendar already. And I know we try to do that as well as a group of people simply because we've got a lot of things to do. But this guy would do it if nobody even told him to or told him that he ought to. He'd already have started as a kid. Dislikes disruption in task performance. Once he gets started on the task, he wants to keep right on going until it's done. And it's hard for him to handle very often disruptions that may take him away from the job that he started on. A couple of hours at a time, or maybe even a couple of days. He may even have to put it away for 6 months. It'll be a frustrating experience for him. They do have difficulty in dealing with people unless they have learned the relationship techniques of how to deal with people. Difficulty relating with people. Again, the primary reason is because they get their self-motivation and they get their esteem through accomplishing things. And so they'll have to learn some of the techniques. And they can. There are lots of things around. A lot of schools around that will help a person learn how to relate. Feeler also says that in any particular job situation, there are situational variables, 3 of them, that you need to look at. When you are assigned to a job, these are 3 things you want to look at. Now, and he's got them listed in order of importance here. The first one is leader-member relations. How do you get along with the people that are on the job? How well? And he says this is the most important situational variable to consider. If you have real difficulty getting along with people, he says, then you need to learn what you can do to modify that. And that's what he calls job engineering. He admits that not everybody's going to be able to get the job that would be most beneficial for his personality type and leadership style. As a result, he says, when you get into a job that's not best for you, then he suggests that you learn how to modify the job so it becomes adaptable to your particular personality. And we'll talk a little bit more of that in a few moments. The second thing that you look at is the task structure. How detailed is the job that has to get done? That's really what task structure is saying. It's either you don't have any detail to it and you've got to supply it yourself, or if the job is already outlined for you in 15 pages of technical papers that tells you every single step you have to go through before you can fly the airplane or whatever. And the last thing he says in terms of importance is leader position power. How much control do you have because of the organization over the people that you work with? Yeah.
I'm not sure what you mean by situational variables.
Okay, those are the variables or things that you can find in any kind of task environment or any type of job. If you're in a ministry, you can see how as the ministry leader, for instance, how do you get along with the people who are in the ministry? Task structure. Is it a very structured kind of a ministry? I mean, does everybody know exactly what he's got to do? Or is it sort of he's the head of this group and he's the head of that group and we kind of let him do his own thing, keeping tabs on it so it doesn't get destroyed, you know, and doing the wrong things? And the third thing is position power, is how much authority and control do you have over a particular person because of your position? And how many sanctions, going back to our original use of power, how many sanctions do you have over people?
Uh-huh. What is the purpose of evaluating these variables? Is it to assign the right person to them?
It's got a two-edged purpose. One is to be able to assign the right person into a job. So if you are a ministry leader, you can look at a particular task you got coming up, and you say a function you want to get done. And you say, what's it going to require? Man, it's going to take high task structure. And, you know, he's going to have to get along with his people because, after all, we are pretty much a voluntary organization. And he's going to have to get a lot of cooperation from people asking him to do things that maybe they don't even have time to do. And he doesn't really have very much position power. Now, what kind of a person might work into that very well? You have to, and we'll show you how you make those kinds of decisions here in just a few moments. Those are some considerations that you'll ask yourself, and I'll show you that in just a few moments. Okay, let's leave this off for just a second. If I have time, I'll go into that. What he shows graphically, and if you understand this particular graph, and it's going to be a very busy one when I take this bottom part away, you'll have a good synopsis of what Fred Fiedler talks about when he says the contingency model and how to make decisions. The dotted line goes along with task-motivated people, and the solid line is for relationship-motivated people. The low LPC and high LPC, that's a score for a test called the least preferred coworker. I'm going to let you have a copy of that. Okay. Now, what he says is, in leader-member relations, they can either be good, and you can see a block of four here, or they can be poor. You don't get along with your people, or you do get along with them fairly well, from very well to just moderate. Okay. Second thing you want to analyze is task structure. Do I have high task structure? And here you have two blocks, and then low task structure, high task structure, and low task structure. And thirdly, leader position power. Is it strong or is it weak? Okay, now supposing you had a situation where you analyzed it, said leader-member relations was good, my task structure was high in the job that I'm going to have, and my leader position power was strong. Now, if you know that's the analysis of the job that's got to get done, who would you choose to do it? That's right. The guy who can perform better, relative performance would be better for the guy who's got the dotted line or the task-motivated guy. If those are the variables, and that's how you've assessed them. By contrast, if they're poor, low, or weak, again, it's the task-motivated leader who tends to do better in those particular situations than the relationship-motivated leader. Now, where would we find the greatest likelihood of the breakdown of our situational variables? At the extremes or in the middle? That's right, at the middle. And as a result of that, you have your moderate area here, and there is a crossover where they begin to do different. You know, you'd pick a different guy. But primarily, you'll find them right here, and you'll find them going up here. Your relationship-motivated person tends to do better in the moderate range of situational variables. Now, he was saying that oftentimes what happens is you get a guy into a job that's just perfect for him. We'll say it's just like this one. You pick a relationship-motivated guy, and does so well. Here you had poor relationships, now it's all of a sudden it's over here to good relationships. It may even be over this far. And he's still got the high here for his task structure. But being his particular kind of leadership, it may be that he's not really as strong as he ought to be, and it turns out to be weak. All of a sudden you either have to modify the job or you change the leader. And that's where he gets in this concept. You know, oftentimes it's very expensive to modify the whole situation by saying, okay, you're fired and you're hired. And now you're fired and you're hired back. You know, and this, it's not very good to do that. So oftentimes what you have to do is help a person learn how to modify his situation so that he becomes effective again. Oftentimes what it'll mean, for instance, is that he may have to get a guy in there who's his second in command, who's also got strong leadership characteristics. And his position power, you can give him position power because of your authority and because of the authority of the organization, and you can, and there are techniques of building that up to where it makes it over into here. But you working as a team, you can continue to operate and operate very well. If at any particular point in time, this guy who is your subordinate who's working just under you, all of a sudden it gets to the point where he's no longer being very effective, the job is, say, very low in terms of its task structure, then you might take over the helmsmanship and begin to run it a little bit more from your particular position. And you kind of flip-flop back and forth as to who is running a particular job or task at any one particular time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they do. They really can. They can change an awful lot. And it can be through a simple incident. And in fact, it can just be through misperceptions of an incident. I'll give you a very quick example. A friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, was having got assigned to a job, and he had some real good relationships with the guys who were working for him. Just super. And they developed it very, very quickly. In one of his staff meetings, he made a slight comment. The comment was, listen, if something's about to leave this organization that's going to be detrimental to us, or it's coming in that is detrimental to us, let me know about it right away. It seemed innocent enough and seemed like it would be the intelligent thing to do. Nothing wrong with that, except that it was perceived to mean, go around my NCOIC, my non-commissioned officer in charge. Don't bother with him, just come straight to me. And what happened was is it changed the leader-member relations like that, and he didn't even know it for almost a week. They turned him off and wouldn't listen to him. And so misperceptions can work in there very, very quickly.
If that's true, it seems like it'd be essential to have both kinds of guys in the constant organization.
Be very, very useful. Yes, sir. You're right. You're right. And you know, look at what happens in a task structure situation. You get a job down and it's ironclad, you know how to get it done, and it's done. All of a sudden a brand new task comes up and nobody's ever done it before, and you don't know how to do it, and it's not broken down. All of a sudden you've got to have a guy in there who can break it down and break it down well. You got a hand up, I believe?
Favorable, moderate, unfavorable. What is that describing again?
Okay, that's describing these situations here. The favorable situation would be in these two blocks right there. The moderate would be right over in here, and the unfavorable would be right over in here. And you can see there's a crossover where these lines cross right here. And it comes, well, like right about down here and one right about here. So the moderate area takes in about this area. Oh, moderate in terms of, say, leader-member relations are good, but the task structure is low and the leader position power is weak. That's a moderate situation, what he calls a moderate situation. Or another moderate situation is poor, high, and strong. So it's in terms of the variables that you're dealing with. That's how he's dealing with it. This is just a way of labeling these categories, okay?
Well, isn't it enough for leadership to recruit? What it's like, or wouldn't it tend to be that an organization got task oriented guy would recruit that type of people for the other way around. And therefore you'd have to kind of clean off part of the leadership, would you? Make a change of it?
That oftentimes happens. That's right.
Take off the leader.
If they're gonna use this and if they're gonna try and modify it so that you do have both types of people there, yeah, they will have to do that. Because you're right, we do reproduce after our own kind and we tend to recruit after our own kind. Why? Why would that be? Well, we believe in it, and we're comfortable too, aren't we? When a guy thinks like we do, not too many conflicts are going to necessarily arise out of that. They can, but not. You know, we usually feel more comfortable with that. Right.
By your comment, you indicated that it would be favorable to have those two different types of people at those leadership positions, whether it be the top company or in the ministry. And the suggestion of that and balance of that, it is. You know, I'm of the opinion that it's better off to teach that we can be both those types of people if we'll study the principles and think of the biblical structure also, that we can raise up those types of men that can handle both those situations.
Yeah, we can, especially in terms of having the power of the Holy Spirit at our disposal. Fred, and I'll just talk it from Fred's standpoint, he would say you can't do that. Because you see, what he's dealing with, and this is strictly from the secular world, you cannot change personality. But see, then he doesn't deal with the spiritual end of it at all. We know that we can take this information. If we've got a guy on our staff who's just extremely highly task motivated, and we know that, hey, that's going to blow him out of the saddle later on. And it will, you know, because the NAV ministry is a very, very relationship motivated situation very often. And your task is people, okay? You can help him get modified, that is, through the power of the Holy Spirit, saying, here are some characteristics that Christ showed in terms of compassion, understanding, and this is some things we may need to work on and developing in our own life. By the same token, if a guy is so relationship motivated that he won't be tied down by objectives, he won't break a task down for anybody, he says, I just give it to a guy and he can go off and do his own thing, then you need to modify that as well, too. And you're right, we can do that as a Christian organization. In the secular world, they're without that power.
You began this lecture this morning saying the various models of leadership, and mm-hmm. we're going through, we're looking at this. How accurate, in your understanding of leadership right now, how accurate do you view this particular model?
Okay, I view it very accurate for the long run. Because over the long haul, as I look at my own style, as I've looked at other leaders' styles, I can tell pretty much whether the guy's been basically a task-motivated person. May have been very, very heavily reduced in that in terms of the Holy Spirit. Or what has been tendency to be a very relationship-motivated person, but has been modified as well. Now, this is good for the long run. And over a long period, when you're thinking of long-term objectives, the one we're going to deal with tomorrow is called the situational leadership model, where you change your style, and that is you change how you deal with people on a project-by-project basis. And they're not in conflict because it's almost a moment-to-moment kind of a change. How much time do you spend in terms of relationship? How much time do you spend in terms of task? Okay? And I think a marriage of the two is very effective and can be very useful because I think we can do them both. Yes, it has been. As a matter of fact, it's been probably the most, from the worldwide standpoint, the most tested theory around. And they'll always have to call leadership theories, because they'll never get anything so ironclad as a physical law or anything like that. But yet it has been. The one tomorrow has also been tested a lot, but not tested as much as Fred Fiedler's around. Okay.
Bob, can a person be a combination of these two, like half and 50% on one and 50% on another? And you seem like a good leader would need to be both of these.
A good leader ought to work towards trying to be able to handle both sides of the coin. And yes, because of the power of the Holy Spirit, we can have that opportunity to get to where we're almost a 50-50. But you will find people in Christian organizations who are task-motivated and who remain that way. Always, and vice versa, who are always relationship motivated. That's all the only way they operate, and not really interested in changing that. I think in our particular environment, it's really necessary that we work at both ends, and work very hard in terms of prayer and Bible study and this sort of thing to help that. You had a question first, excuse me.
Yeah, I just make an observation. It seems to me, at least from people I've met and for myself, that you change the way you do things so that you act more like a relationship motivated person, but you still retain the other thing. I'm just wondering, does mm-hmm. anybody feel like they've really changed their basic motivation, or whether they felt like they've taken upon themselves the characteristics of the other? That, for myself, it's like I've always been task motivated, and I've learned to develop the characteristics of relationship motivation simply because I need to work with people to get my tasks done.
Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. You can actually have a modification in your personality. It'll take time for the Holy Spirit. Now, of course, I can't restrict the Holy Spirit. Sometimes He works overnight, too. I've seen that happen. I think I'm a prime example of somebody who's still got a lot of task motivation in him, but I used to be so task motivated that I didn't care about people at all. And before I became a Christian, if the person didn't like me, I couldn't care less. If they did, I still didn't care at all. In fact, I remember when I became a Christian, I heard people saying, you got to have a heart for men. I was saying, a heart for what? I don't even understand what they're taught. How do you get a heart for men? Didn't understand that at all. And the Holy Spirit was able to work that around to where I have a much different personality than what I did before I became a Christian. Really different. And that was that's a pure miracle. My wife will tell you that.
Can people just naturally be half and half?
Some people are that way, but they still will have a tendency to be one way more than the other. They won't be just strictly 50-50.
I was just comparing to something like temperaments.
Mm-hmm.
Never all.
That's right. You will have a balance in there between the one or two of the two styles, but you will find that you tend to go more one way than you do another. Have a tendency in that direction. Well, I see we're out of time, and I didn't cover everything, but that's the way it's going to have to be. We'll have to stop right there.